My guest at this time is Dr. Mark Ragnaris, a professor at the University of Texas, Austin. He is also a senior fellow in sociology at the Austin Institute for the Study of Family and Culture. For the past several years, Dr. Ragnaris has been at the forefront of the debate over the impact of same-sex parenting on children. However, today we want to get his reaction to new research alleging there really is no long-term negative impact on teens who have their first same-sex experience with adults considerably older than them. And Dr. Ragnaris, thanks very much for being with us.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
The conclusions reached in these relatively shortly worded studies on both teenage boys and girls who engaged in same-sex experiences with adults who were on average in their mid to late 20s is that there is no long-term damage to speak of in terms of shame or regret or other lingering issues. We're going to get into this in a lot of different ways, but you have a number of concerns with these studies, starting with the amount and age of the research. Why is that?
Right. Yeah, well, one of the studies is from the Kinsey data of old, and it's not that it's how old it is, but that Kinsey was notorious for just sort of collecting data from anybody who had talked to him. And so there's a lot of what we would call self-selectivity. Different kinds of people are opening up to him about sexual matters. So it was never a great sample to begin with. And another aspect of that and of the study that on boys was that it's a very small sample when we look at the people who have had first sex with somebody who is much older than them. We're talking about less than 30 cases apiece. And if anybody knows my research from studying the children who grew up with a parent in a same-sex relationship, you know that small samples make it very easy for scholars to conclude that there are no differences because they can't detect them statistically, even if they are visible in the data.
So, Dr. Ragnaris, in writing a response for the Witherspoon Institute, you also point out that while the research shows the teens often didn't want the interaction, they pretty much always went along with it. What does that tell you?
Right. And it indicates this sort of quite a bit of power imbalance, right? I mean, one of the ploys that's going on here is that, oh, regardless of the situation in which the first sex occurred, the outcomes long term are okay. And, oh, you know, going along with it is some form of consent, right? And I think that's a ridiculous notion to suspect that somehow we're talking about power that's equal between a 13-year-old and, say, a 27 or 28-year-old. It's kind of a ludicrous notion. At the same time, I ran this past a friend of mine who has experienced all of these things, and she resonated with that experience and said, yet it is deeply and disturbing, and it has long-term consequences, even if you find people who are just kind of going along with it. Going along with it is hardly consent. So then Rind, the author, moves in and says, well, they said they enjoyed these events, boys more than girls. But even that doesn't mean that long-term destruction does not take place.
How does that get quantified? Because you have to assume that the person you're talking with realizes the impact that this may have had on them. Because
right.
I remember from earlier this year with the controversy surrounding Milo Yiannopoulos and him being essentially molested at a young age. And then right around that same time, there was video that came out from a few years ago of George Takei, the Star Trek actor, who is also openly gay, joking about an experience he had with a counselor when he was a young teenager at camp. So they don't see this necessarily
right.
as traumatic as opposed to the gateway into the lifestyle they have now. So how do you even accurately quantify the impact something like this will have on someone?
Well, it's very difficult to accurately quantify. It pays, as you say, to sort of think about like how is somebody reflecting on an incident that may have been unwanted, 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And then how are they thinking about it today, especially since that incident can be influential in how they perceive themselves and the kind of sexual identity or orientation they claim. So the combination of concerns here seems enough for me to say, oh, this should not be in print. But the disturbing thing is that they are in print. Attempts at this were made before 20 plus years ago with an outcry around this from Congress, from the American Psychological Association. And now here they are back again in respectable academic journals. And I'm just mentally thinking, here they are teeing up the kind of evidence to overturn age of consent laws.
And that leads me exactly to where I want to go here, because the elephant in the room that we haven't really gotten to in our discussion until you just mentioned it is that the underlying premise here seems to be that this research is designed to try and remove the stigma of sex between adults and minors. Is there any other way to read that?
Yeah, I'm not sure there is another way to read that. I mean, that's what I saw when I read them. They all come from the same person, and it's not as if they're being praised or lauded. It's that they have been released, published, and largely to quiet, right? And I think, to be quiet here is to be complicit. And so I thought, we have to call this out.
Talk about that. Does that mean we're kind of at the tip of the spear and then we're a long way from this being publicly embraced by any large number of people?
Right. I think it's fair to say that 20 years ago it was denounced. 20 years later, today, it's out here again, and it's quietly just accepted. I don't think people like it, generally speaking. But so downstream from documenting something becomes acceptability, becomes something that's legal. I don't know that we'll ever legalize this sort of thing. I pray not. But there's a bridge being built in that direction.
We've obviously seen so much activism on a number of different fronts in recent years. Do you believe that inside the LGBT movement that there is a quiet push for this, removing age of consent laws?
The movement would be it's too massive of a movement to sort of characterize there as being like a center who wants this. I think this is a fringe of that movement. I don't know how large it is. I would think it would come from the gay side rather than the lesbian or bisexual component. I don't know. That's a good question, and only they would know.
If, in fact, they get any traction on this, where does the slope stop?
Oh, man. I don't we keep sort of unraveling things piece by piece here, right? The quest for marriage, I say in my new book entitled Cheap Sex, was actually sort of a cultural land grab. And here we're seeing like just a little bit more evidence that what's at stake here is sort of human decency and the dignity of children and persons in general.
Dr. Regnerus, what advice do you have for young teens, for parents of kids of any age, really, given what we're talking about here, to be aware of?
It's time to be talking to your children, not in an alarmist fashion, but in a very realist fashion about what's going on, what they might expect, and sort of to instill in people a sense of their inherent dignity and worth, and the idea that sort of consent is all that matters, I think, is kind of a very short-sighted one. I mean, consent by itself, even if you add pleasure, which is what Professor Rind wants to do in his studies, I think that's still short-sighted. What we're looking at is sort of a comprehensive union when we're talking about the sexual union. It's just frightening to me that people want to pick apart at that until there's almost nothing left.
Obviously, it's a difficult issue, extremely difficult issue, and different kids could react in different ways. But do you have any advice for parents and kids when it comes to realizing that if something like this happens to them, it's not their fault, they're a victim of a crime?
Right. Absolutely, I agree 100%. One of the distressing things about these studies is that people sort of events like this, minor adult sex, can lead minors to rewrite their own autobiography. So 20 years, 30 years later, as you mentioned earlier, people are looking back at an event that was unwelcomed, unwanted, and frame it in rather different and more positive terms. And that's just distressing.
last question before we let you go, sir. We'll see what other research ends up coming down the pike here, and I use that almost in quotation marks. But given the intense, and that's probably not a big enough word, intense backlash that you have gotten for the research you've done and the conclusions you've reached, do you get the sense that the scientific community will be more on the side of this study or not?
I think, as I said in the article, I think, you know, they're quiet. And they don't want to make a commotion. And as I said, the center in the study of sexual behavior has collapsed, right? It's all sex positivity is kind of the watchword. So, you know, people frame me as being sex negative, and I think that's not true. One of the things that is disturbing is that there's not just foundation money underwriting this. Even the federal government via the National Institutes of Health, the National Science Foundation, is kind of tacitly complicit in this kind of research. And so it's like spitting in the wind. It's disturbing that this guy publishes stuff on minor adult sex to quietness. You know, and anything I say is, you know, shouted down from the rooftops, which is distressing, to say the least.
Yeah, when all you're talking about is the benefits of an intact heterosexual couple
right.
raising their family. Dr. Ragnaris, it's a difficult subject. It's one we would prefer probably not to think about a lot, but it's happening, right. and it's important that folks know about it. Thanks for your time today very much.
Right. You're welcome. Thanks.
Dr. Mark Ragnaris is a professor at the University of Texas at Austin. He is also a senior fellow in sociology at the Austin Institute for the Study of Family and Culture. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.